Hey everybody, Street Fight Radio, third show edition. All of your support online on Patreon, support for Street Fight Radio has culminated in three shows a week, as we promised. And, you know, the first two we do cover our most of our topics, but we want to spread some new voices out there and talk to people and, you know, let them do some of the work for our third show. For those of you that are just tuning in, if you're just tuning in to hear our guest, you can find Street Fight Radio on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud, all the major podcasting apps, three times a week. StreetFightRadio.com has all the stuff you can lick. Click on, not lick.
Gross.
I know, sorry. Click on. This week, we have a special guest, Angelica Clark. She is the host of the Left World podcast, fairly new on the scene, but I have given it a listen, and we'll be talking about that. And so I guess let's just get started. How is your day going so far, Angelica?
It's going pretty well. Kind of tired from doing some work today in the house, but other than that, feeling good.
I worked real hard today too. I had to watch wrestling for a podcast I'm doing tomorrow.
Not a fan?
Huge fan, but
Well, so I guess we can start with that. I mean, what is your feelings about professional wrestling or relationship to professional wrestling?
Oh, I don't have a relationship to professional wrestling now. When I was younger, I used to be a huge fan of, you know, SmackDown and Raw, but I haven't gotten into it again.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
You will. If you've ever been a fan, you'll be back. I can guarantee. Because I left for like 18 years. And then I got to see what's going on with wrestling again. And now I'm like watching Japanese wrestling.
I will say that I follow like a few UFC fighters on Instagram. So I don't know. Maybe I'm getting slowly but surely.
I like UFC. UFC, like, because I didn't understand it before, because wrestling, I don't watch any other sports but wrestling. So I think I really just like performance art based. Like I like people acting. I don't like, it's like these football players aren't impressing me with their chops or anything like that.
You're not about athleticism. Like you're into the storyline.
Well, I do also like athleticism, but when I watch sport, like this is how into the storyline I am. When I watched like sports a lot, all the sports, I would just watch Sports Center all day. I never watched a whole game. I just wanted to hear people talking about sports.
Wow. Okay.
So are you into any sports at all? Do you want to pay attention to any, or just you're thinking about getting an MMA?
I mean, I'm not really thinking about getting into it. I'm just Instagram right now. I haven't gone past Instagram into anything
else. That's the first step.
Every time I try to watch sports, like I kind of get distracted. Like I'll start to watch like Sports Center or something, and then I'll just like get too caught up in it because I won't know what they're talking about. And then I'm like, okay, you've lost me because I haven't been catching up for too long.
So then my next question is, do you consider sports to be counter-revolutionary in any sort of way?
Well, I mean, I think it's counter-revolutionary that college athletes are forced to perform without pay. I think they should be allowed to unionize.
Yeah. Do you think about I have a capitalist solution to this problem, and that is like,
oh, interesting.
Give them a minor league, right? Like at least give them the opportunity to make money while they're at that level, you know? I can't.
Well, I mean, but why not give them the opportunity to make money while the college is making a lot of money off them?
Yes, I agree too. I mean, but you're talking to two guys in Columbus, Ohio. They can't come that out.
Right. I went to Texas A&M, so I definitely was deeply embedded in like, yes, this is right. And then I'm like, oh no, that's fucked up that they're, that, you know, they're kind of beating their bodies up for, you know, $0. I guess they get a scholarship, but that's not enough, I don't think.
No, especially if you don't want to go to college. Like that's nothing. That's thanks a lot. You gave me a bunch of work to do.
Right. Like I really just wanted to play this sport and now I'm forced to take classes.
Yeah.
There's so much working for free in college. Actually you're paying to work, but when I was in college, it was like, yeah, you know, you got it as part of my sociology degree. I had to work on a project for free for a semester.
Oh,
I just had to do work. And it was like counting petitions. I ended up getting paid in the end, but I did it for 9 weeks for free before they hired me. You can't do that anywhere else but college.
Right, exactly. Yeah, when I first was getting into like organizing, one of the things that got me like extra hype was I read this manifesto from like, I think it was like a French university students about how they should get paid to go to school. And I was like, yeah, that's a good fucking point. Like, I'm tired of this.
Yeah, the French have great labor politics.
Yeah. Work distracts so much from going to school. It's ridiculous. So, yeah.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Especially
Texas A&M is wonderful. I spent some time down there, and it is pretty, it's the most similar I've felt to Columbus as far as like the football takeover of the city is concerned. Like, if you're out there on game day, it's going to be nuts.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone is dedicated. Like, it's kind of like a cult, I guess. I don't know. I think I've been to Columbus maybe one time for a student conference. But other than that, I haven't been able to fully experience it.
Yeah.
One day this will be a destination that people will make a pilgrimage to, and then Brent and I will take them around and get them high and feed them donuts and pizza. Like
it already sounds like a destination right there.
we can make this city. Yeah, like it's a cool place. It's just where are you at, actually? That's good. That's a
smart question.
Right now I'm in Arkansas. I'm in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Ooh,
so like South Central Arkansas, yeah. It's okay. I went to high school here. So I'm kind of like, all right, I'm back home for a second. And I'm just desperately trying to avoid everyone from high school. It's not really working though, because when I go into stores, sometimes that's who's the cashier is someone from high school. I'd be like, oh, hey, it's good to see you. You know, it's been a decade or whatever. But, you know, I'm just trying to keep my head down.
Yeah. So what makes it great though? Is there anything there that makes it better than anywhere else in the world?
I would say the outdoors stuff you can do. Cause it's not like a huge like cultural draw, but, in terms of like, you know, you can go and see, you know, you can just take a 10-minute drive and be kind of in this majestic kind of mountainous.
I want that.
Yeah, so it's that about it is nice.
You can tie some fishing line around your toe and fall asleep by a lazy brook or something.
Oh, definitely.
Brett and I
would definitely catch some fish.
Brett and I both have this like real hillbilly type vibe to our thing, and we just drove down to Pikeville last week, and we both realized that we like spend a lot more too much time in the city. Like we can't take that nature vibe anymore, because as we drove every town, every tiny little town that's surrounded by woods that we drove by, we're like, you know, this place is really beautiful. I love this place. I feel like I could live here.
Yeah.
And I definitely get that, because just even just there's like one little, because here there's like a couple of nice little breweries and stuff, and I'm like, okay, I could think about staying here a while.
Yeah, that helps.
I'm like, hey, that's nice. Like there, you know, there's like a place called Bathhouse Row, and there's like a new brewery that just opened up, and they're like, oh, we have all these great brews and these great food. I'm like, okay, I could kind of hang out here a little bit.
You know what bums me, what ends up bumming you out, at least me, and this maybe will tell you where my priorities are, is that like Arkansas, I would go there. Like Little Rock sounds sweet. I watched some movies. I watched Banging in Little Rock, but that didn't make me want to go to Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right.
But I mean, but like the weed laws are crazy down south. Like, really, like when we went to Kentucky, I didn't even take my bowl because I was like, oh, they're talking about 45 days of jail for your first offense with weed.
Exactly. And I mean, here it's like, I think part of the issue in the South is that there's like not really anyone watching. So with enforcement, they kind of can decide for themselves, like, all right, you know, I know this person sells drugs and everybody in town knows. So whenever I stop them, if I pick them up and they have anything, I can then sort of just, you know, crank the hammer down on them. People getting, you know, 5-10 years for what ends up being possession, but sort of a mythology around them. And I think that like in the, you know, Northeast and stuff, they would love to do that. Like cops talk about that shit all the time, but they can't actually make it happen. But down here it's possible because nobody's watching. And of course, you know, here trying to pick up, it's like, you know, you have to do espionage basically to make it happen.
I'm afraid of Southern cops. When I was in Texas to visit Brett. I was just in Dallas, and that's a metropolitan city. I mean, I come from a more hillbilly place than Dallas. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, I just felt like the police were all like guys with machine guns that were like would take me down for looking at them the wrong way or cussing.
Exactly.
Popping your gum too loud.
They're just scary. It's like a mythos. It's a real mythos built around them that makes them terrifying. But I think people from the South are terrified of Northern cops or like how aggressive they are, you know? We got the worst police station.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like either. I think it goes definitely both ways. Like people are, because I think people don't really know about Southern cops that much, so they don't have that fear. But like if you're in the North, they're like, oh, they just assume it's going to be bad, but they don't really think about it too much. But I think the cops, you know, they think they're badasses everywhere, right? So you give them cowboy hats and boots and a fucking SUV, and it's over. You know, they're like they're riding around town like, you know, kings of the world.
A StreetFi listener wrote me and said that they got arrested on May Day and they noticed the cop was wearing Oakley sunglasses that had a Punisher skull on the side of them. And he just was laughing the whole time that this jagoff was the guy arresting him.
That's just embarrassing.
You know what? I would say what I see with Northern cops is they are very pissed off at like the Southern drawl, like the slowness of it. I think really infuriates them and like is why they lash out on a lot of people. It's what I sometimes feel that way. I guess see that.
Yeah. I mean, they automatically, because you're in the North, they think you're, I mean, the Southern draw, even I thought people with Southern draws were stupid until like 4 years ago, you know, you hear a guy talking, you're like, well, that guy's dumb. But I love, now I've come to like love the fact that it like seems slower and they really like, you'll hear a Southern dude like cut somebody down in a good argument and you're like, oh man, I didn't even see that coming.
Right. They're so polite with it.
Yeah, we're polite too. Midwest is pretty polite as well. A lot of people know, like when we went to Canada, that they were like, oh, you're from Ohio, aren't you? And they're like, and I said, how do you know that? And they said, you said please and thank you.
Oh, wow.
It's passive aggressive though. It's because of it's because we feel like, he didn't say thank you. He doesn't have any respect for me at all.
Yeah, I think Canada is where I think, you know, that's where the rude people go to exist. Like, everyone thinks they're so polite. I don't know. But Montreal, at least, I'm like, okay, you know, I know someone's gonna say something to me when I'm visiting here. I'm going to be like, yo, let's go.
I mean, the only real rude places I think of are New York. That's the only place I can think of as, like, really having a rude dude. L.A. has a rude dude too.
Yeah.
But the rest of them are kind of like, I mean, look, people here love Columbus. Like they buy shirts with like almost all the clothes worn in this city say something about Ohio on them. Like, or Columbus. That's like 99%. There's like 6 stores that sell just t-shirts with Ohio stuff on them downtown, so like people are proud of it, but like they don't go off and say like my place is the only place where pizza happens.
That's a good point.
How is the pizza in your area?
Oh, you know, I'll be honest, I have not even tasted it.
Wow.
Because I'm afraid, because I'm originally from New York and I've been living there for the past like 10 years or so. And, there's a place right down the street from me called DeLuca's Pizzeria and it says Brooklyn Pizza on it. And I'm like, maybe that's going to be good, but I don't believe it. Cause I've gone to like a pizza buffet here and the sauce was sweet. And I just was like, okay, I'm over this. It's done.
You got to do it.
I can't do it.
That's their tacos, at least.
You think it's going to be good? Tacos?
Yeah, Texas.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All the pizza in Texas was all imported stuff like that. There was no like discernible Texas style pizza. It was just someone trying to do New York style, and they were just buying like bulk ingredients from like Linsanti Food Services,
right?
Just busting open cans of stuff and like throwing pizzas out the door for $10. You know.
Yeah,
pretty much. I think like, the place that builds itself is like Brooklyn Pizza is probably good. But
yeah,
I haven't made it there yet. But I think I'm gonna check it out.
What are you eating instead though? Like, what's the good shit that you're getting down there instead of pizza?
I mean, I'm just getting, like, you know, kind of down home food, basically, like
the biscuits.
Yeah,
the biscuits are so
yeah,
good
biscuits,
there.
Biscuits and gravy, like fried chicken, mac and cheese. I had some amazing cornmeal stuffing a couple days ago. Like, just, you know,
home-cooked
stuff primarily, I think.
Yeah, the good stuff. So I was listening to your podcast, the most recent one this week, and I heard you have a pretty big interest in what sounds like action movies. And we absolutely love action movies on Street Fight Radio.
Yeah.
So you went and saw John Wick 2 and went over it. How badass was that shit?
Yeah, it was really badass. It was like kind of more, I would say it's more badass than the first John Wick, but it was like less storyline, but it was definitely more like kicking ass and like fights in the hallways and just all the great shit that you need, I think.
You can never have, I can handle like the smallest amount of storyline in a movie. one of my favorite action movies is Crank. And it's because they tell the whole story in the first 2 minutes, and then it's just a guy running and killing things.
Yeah, have you seen Crank? I feel like that's what you need. Like, I agree. Like, I think if it tries to do too much story, like most action movies get lost and they like forget their own storyline. So like, you know, you don't need to do that. Just give me some action.
You're right. They get too big. It gets way too big, and then they can't keep it all together. And then you're supposed to assume some stuff. So, I mean, have you been a lifelong action movie fan? Like, what got you into it? I used to watch, like, because when I was a kid, I would watch all the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. And then I would go to Taekwondo practice, and my mom would tell me to kick like they were doing auditions for a new Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. And I would just be out there like kicking until my foot fell off. And so that's what, I mean, that was my hero when I was a kid.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I think my mom probably is the one who got me into action movies, because she always had like the VHSs of like the Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal. She had like all the Highlander movies. They were amazing. And then just kind of the like sort of cheesy like B movies, like The Rock and that kind of shit. And I was just like, all right, cool, let's go, you know.
The Rock is an A plus movie.
I agree, but like I feel like The Rock and like Con Air and stuff, like people don't like to say that they like those movies, but I love them, so I don't care. I'm not ashamed.
I think it's cool that when like there comes a time, like it didn't happen to me till like recently, probably in the past like 5 years, but when you just realize, you know what, everybody's lying about what they like, and I'm just gonna be fucking honest, and I like The Rock. I think The Rock is fine. It's just as fine as Goodfellas to me. That's, they're on the same plane.
Yo, that's a controversial opinion, but I mean, I'm kind of with you, because I'm a Casino fan myself. So.
What do you get more joy out? Really, when you sit down and watch a movie, and like, I love movies like The Godfather and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have this weird thing about treating something like it's the best, you know, and the best that it's at anything's going to be. And I think there are times where people are like, oh, you know, you like Hot Rod is one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
You're not as sophisticated as I am. I like The Godfather. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, that gets on my nerves too, because I'm just like, yo, I know that I like laughed and still continue to laugh watching like Talladega Nights.
I love that, but it's such a good one.
Like, I'm not, that's okay. That's cool. I love that. And yeah, I mean, I think it's probably true that there's like technical things that they get, you know, that you could say they're the best, but I don't think it's true that like there's something that we all need to love because it's the best thing. I just think it's like, yo, if it's your thing, you like it. That's okay. Enjoy. Like, I don't need to like that thing. Keep it moving.
Yeah, the insistence that you fall into like fall in line with like the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I don't know. I don't like that stuff.
I don't like the Hall of Fame stuff. And I don't like the AFI Top 100 or the Hall of Fame stuff because other people do it. I'm being contrarian. But right. Like, I just feel like, ah, oh, man, it's when something starts taking itself that seriously, I kind of bow out of it. You know, I Pierre Bourdieu is the dude that like I read his stuff when I was in college, and he talks a lot about transmitting class, mm-hmm. through like what entertained you through your movies, TV, and things like that. And like, I started realizing that a lot of times, man, people are just transmitting class, you know,
like right. when they talk about or kind favorite. Of like you know, kind of something pretending to that class, right? Because I think there's a lot of people that see themselves as sort of middle class or upper middle class that just are not, but you know, there's a way to create that via like having these kind of fancy preferences.
Yeah,
but, if it's, you know, it doesn't just change your material conditions to like those things, actually, it turns out.
Yeah. I mean, and if it's as easy as turning on NPR, I mean, why not? Or, you know, buying something, buying a conscious capitalism item.
Right. the green Starbucks mug or something.
it really is also, though, it's one of those things that, like, it really separates, like, it would separate me. One of the things that kind of separate, I guess, it's so hard for me to explain this, that, like, the way that people, like, when you look at Trump voters, right? Like, the contempt that people have for them also are because they're like, the reason they keep making all these Fast and the Furious movies is because all these idiots go and see them. You know what I mean? And it's like, what are we trying to do here?
And I love Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious has a complete story that it's like a good series. So, I mean, and lots of people get something out of it, but you're right. I mean, you have to say you don't like it because it supposedly turns everybody into zombies.
Yeah, that's the left. It's like usually right. the left, right? That's the left elitist yeah. kind of thing. Is it's like these people watch these cars wreck into each other, and then all of a sudden they're like, cut taxes for the rich, throw everybody in prison. It's like, that's not
right. just... Yeah, those things don't really go together. But honestly, I wonder, like, I don't know enough about, like, you know, kind of what, you know, what John McCain prefers or what, you know, kind of a high level conservative is into. But I feel like that would probably cross left and right in terms of, like, their, you know, the elitism.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody can get something out of Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, oh, yeah, I definitely. Mean, if you can't, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You're broken.
I mean, like, I saw somebody say the other day, like, sheepishly, that they've never seen The Sopranos. And, I think I'm one of the only people on the internet that saw The Sopranos and didn't like it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I watched
every episode of that show, and I just didn't like it. But I always felt like a dumbass for not. Do you see what, like, I always felt
like... Yeah, I understand, because everybody talks about it, like, oh, this is so... I mean, I'll be honest, I have not seen The Sopranos, but I mean, not because I think, I don't know, I don't know what it's... I don't know that I don't like it, because I haven't watched it.
It's a steep climb.
I just, you know, I feel like at the time I was probably watching, like, Heroes or something, you know what I mean? Like, whatever it was on.
Heroes
was,
is dope.
I'm all about that
shit.
Brett likes Heroes.
The first season of Heroes, if they would have just stopped and let it be, like, that 20-some episodes, it encapsulated... an incredible story. I was so blown away by that first season.
Yeah, it was very good. Second season, not so much.
No, I know.
But, I mean, I really enjoyed Heroes. Like, Heroes is actually why I got on Twitter, because I was like, oh, people on Twitter are going to talk about Heroes. I was like, let's get on. I was like, I want to chat, because it was like after kind of MSN Messenger and like that kind of world started to fade away. I was like, all right, how can I get back into chatting to go on Twitter?
I hope Heroes radicalized you. Did you get radicalized a little bit?
No, that was the war in Afghanistan, but you know, but Heroes...
Was it happening at the time? Like, you got to Twitter through Heroes, and you weren't. Were you a particularly political person before that? Were you like following politics before you came to Twitter?
Yeah, I was.
I was not. I. That's.
Oh yeah.
I feel like everybody started smarter than me from the day they came on there.
Yeah, we're in like the behind class.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I never used Twitter like to talk about politics until probably like maybe 5 years ago or something. Because before I was, like I said, I was only using it to talk about
that first season. Heroes, you had to know what was going on.
I liked, you know, yeah, exactly.
Had a whole week to debate what was going to happen.
When I was the cable guy, I told this woman, I was working at somebody's house, and this woman asked me about Twitter. The older woman, very old. Mm. Actually, like senior citizen type old, and she asked me about how to get on Twitter. And now I just always think so that she could tweet about the news. And I'm like, man, she's probably tweeting some racist shit. Right now.
Put some new asshole in the mix.
Yeah.
That's funny. Like that's, I used to do like voter registration, and that was one of the things that they kind of like train into you is like, everyone deserves to vote. Everyone deserves like, and that was you, everyone deserves to be on Twitter. You know, it doesn't matter.
Oh, not even them. It's gonna be racist shit, you know? Yeah, I don't think they deserve to vote. If I'm looking at this situation, yeah. So what? I mean, what did? I guess what is kind of your political career? Brian and I talk about ours all the time, so they've already heard this. We need some new. We need some new information.
Well, you were radicalized by
stories.
Yeah, you were about three years earlier than me. You were three years earlier than I was in radicalizing because you're saying Afghanistan. So I have to hear how, like, you probably hated me at that time. You're like, this fucking guy doesn't know anything.
You know what? I was definitely like into, like, I believe that everyone at the time when I first sort of started to do anti-war organizing, like, I definitely believe that, like, if people just knew what was going on, that they would oppose, the war. So I was all about information. Like, I was like, here you go. You know, like, we would do pamphlets, of course. So, like, you know, we would have these pamphlets. We would pass them out. Like, I remember when I was at A&M, George came, and Dick Cheney came, and, like, of course, all, you know, everyone, all of those people came. And so we picketed their event, and we like passed out flyers about the casualties in Afghanistan at the time, and it was like talking about, you know, we're just like, of course they just need to, you know, receive these pamphlets, and then, you know, and then they'll change their position. But, you know, of course I didn't have any idea about you know, their conservative legacy, and I was like, here, they just need to get one of our pamphlets, you know, that'll switch it up.
They'll unbrainwash them.
It's like actually very militaristic, you know, like there's a corps of cadets and stuff for the school. And the political science school there is the George H.W. Bush School of Political Science. And like the guy who became Secretary of Defense, under Obama was the president of, I was there. So it was kind of probably the worst place to try to do that. But you know, I believed, so I was like, here you go, guys.
Yeah. You have to
learn
do
about
I mean,
this, you know, maybe
if your heart's telling you to do it, you have to do it. Like, I just got to follow, you got to follow through. So was your childhood that way too? Were you just not involved at all, or did your parents tell you going to be at all,
or did your parents be like,
yeah, no,
dumb, you don't get to have any politics?
Because a lot of people's parents did that.
That's true.
No, I mean, my mom kind of didn't like that we didn't have to have any politics, but she didn't really talk about politics at home, so it wasn't something that was ever. It didn't really even come up, honestly. I'm like, yeah, but I'm like, no, basically my Nana had a bust of JFK in her house, and that was kind of the extent of it, you know, good Catholic in upstate New York. So she just had, you know, I was like, okay, JFK was probably good. And that was pretty much it. So that never really came up at all. But going to college kind of is what really made it happen for me. Like, I just was like able to branch out and learn about different things. And,
right.
And I was like, all right, time to, you know, like, I'm politicized now. I know about this shit that's going on. And I was always raised with like kind of a anti, like militaristic kind of sentiment. Just from like, just because my father was in the military, and he actually passed away in the military in 91. And so there was kind of always, and he was a young man at the time. And like, it was partially due to like just mismanagement at Walter Reed Hospital, which then oddly enough, like right around the time I was going to college, became the huge scandal when they sort of discovered that like the ceilings were coming down, and you know, it was just terrible conditions there. So that kind of like confluence came where it's like, that's happening as a result of like political decisions, not just like kind of the circumstances or whatever. So that was also kind of helping me on my path to just sort of disagreeing with the state and like not trusting the state, essentially. And that being the starting point, and then sort of learning from there as to exactly what, you know, what conditions are really, you know, going on in the world as a result of U.S. policy.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. So how openly are you now with politics with your family and stuff? And Facebook and friends.
Very much so. I used to be the executive director at a social justice center in Albany, New York. And so they kind of all know about it. it's pretty clear what's going on. And my dad's family is from Jamaica, so they're all socialists anyway. So they kind of are already on board. And my mom is just, you know, my mom voted for, she was very adamant to tell me she voted for George Bush, 2004. Yeah.
I believe that. Everybody did.
Okay. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And I really, like when it came to 2008, I was like, please don't do this, mom. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't have you voting for John McCain right now. And she was like, okay, honey, you know, okay, Peanut, I'll do, you know, I'll vote for Obama. And I was like, all right, let's, that's it. That's all. That's as good as it gets, I think, as far as that goes. But she's a fairly conservative person.
They scared the shit out of like everybody in 2000, like that 2004 election really just, it was just people going on TV trying to scare the shit out of you, like more and more each side. It was like the Republicans are like, the wolves are coming. They had ads where they would just have wolves in a field, like attacking their prey. And they're like, people are trying to get at you every day. And like, if you're just like a conservative lady that sits at or that doesn't pay attention to politics very much, then I would have been like, this, yeah, John Kerry doesn't look like he's got my back against these wolves.
Yeah, exactly.
But I voted for John Kerry. I actually did the right thing in that one. So I felt good about that decision.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. At my school, we had a mock election, and John Kerry won, and we were, like, convinced that was going to be reflected in.
Yeah, doe-eyed children. Doe-eyed. I don't ever stop feeling bad because my daughter kept saying she was worried about Donald Trump becoming president, and I said, don't worry, it's never going to happen. And now it happened, and she's like, of course, even more worried now, because it's like, my dad doesn't know anything.
Yeah, he didn't even see it coming.
He's like, I used to trust your perspective, but now I'm questioning it. But no, I mean, I don't know. I definitely was hoping, you know, I was hoping that it wasn't going to be that way, but ultimately. Well,
if John Kerry didn't get elected, we wouldn't have had Obama. Probably.
Oh, okay, you're right. Yeah.
That's the way I think, because they would have been like, this is, well, actually they did try to do this it's not your turn thing to Obama too.
Yeah, they did.
So
I mean, but it's, I don't know, it's interesting, because I do wonder about like the alternate timelines, you know. Like what would that have been too. Like, I don't know,
2000. Yeah. Like, you people, I think there are a lot of liberal, like moveon.org type people that are like, if Al Gore had just, if it wouldn't have been George Bush and it would have been Al Gore, we'd be okay now, none of this bad shit would have happened.
I mean, it's just because it's, you can see how obviously it shifts now. So yeah, let's get into, how has your post-Trump America, how have you been dealing with that since the count, you know, it's been 100 days or so now. How are you dealing with it?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's funny. Before Trump, I wasn't kind of keeping, like, I had stopped kind of doing the, like, sort of policy obsessed, like, kind of reading all the articles about what's, you know, what's happening day to day in Washington. And I studied political science at school, so that was kind of something I was into, so I would just do that on a regular basis. But I kind of stopped doing that because I was like, oh, okay, you know, I have like a broader perspective, and I kind of want to focus in on like what I can do at like the New York State level, or, you know, wherever I'm located, like what kind of organizing I want to be doing. And I sort of wanted to focus in on that, and not let myself get distracted by the minutia of like what's happening day to day. And I definitely will say that I have allowed myself to get a little bit more interested in that, partially because, you know, it seems like every single day they're thinking of a new cruel policy to enact. So it's kind of like, oh, let's pay attention to that stuff a little bit more. But I'm kind of like, as the 100 days have winded down, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, like it might be time to step away from that, and to get back into sort of focusing in more on what can actually happen, like sort of tangibly with actions that I take, rather than being sort of too deeply concerned with the ins and outs of, you know, the vote counts on any given day.
Right. I actually just saw today, like I don't read the policy stuff very much either. Unless it's something that I think, unless it's something that's in that, the, you know, the stuff Street Fight does, like if it's about poverty, mm-hmm. if it's about, you know, healthcare, day-to-day life, if it's about day-to-day life for normal people, then I try to read it. And I read their overtime legislate, their new overtime thing mm-hmm. that they've come out with, and I'm just horrified by it. Like, they can give you, instead of paying you time and a half now, they can give you an hour and a half of time off the next week.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, because you're never going to be able to.
Money. That's less money.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
You're never going to be able to take that time. You will never, if you work a service job, you're not going to get to take that time when you want to take that time.
There was times I've worked 6 hours of mandatory overtime. That would be a whole day off. And there's no way in hell I can imagine them giving me a whole day off.
Well, even if they could give you a whole day off, they'd be like, oh, why don't you go ahead and you can have Wednesday the 23rd of August off. Like, you, like they're not going to give you like the day right. you want. You know?
Everybody will let you leave an hour and a half early every day for a week.
Yeah, and I think what that also serves to do, right, is like push down their desire to give you any overtime at all, right? Because they already don't want to. And I think that, you're like, right. the folks who set the wages, you know, since I'm in Arkansas, thinking about Walmart, you know, the folks who set the wages, like, are definitely keenly aware about, like, the overtime rules and the positive changes that were going on under Obama. And now we're seeing, like, kind of the opposite turn, of course. But I think that's going to just push those hours, the hour offerings, like, lower and lower.
Yeah.
As, you know, they keep kind of creating a more finite system. Because, like, you know, if, even if it is shitty, right, it's like an hour, you know, they're giving you an hour and a half off or whatever. But just, like, even if you try to enforce that, I think that they don't want to set themselves up for a situation where workers are trying to enforce that hour and a half off, like, on demand, and then being able to file a bad labor practice against them, you know? So I kind of feel like these, it really seems like we're going in a direction that's anti-worker in sort of every piece of legislation that's coming out. But that, I think, particularly is pretty insidious. Like, of course, people probably don't even want that hour and a half off, you know, beyond the fact that it's just, like, impractical.
Yeah, I mean, it is like something that nobody was talking about overtime. Everybody knows you get time and a half. And then they just like picked it up and put it on the chopping block. And now, like you said, they mm-hmm. come up with some crazy law. But all that means is that we're going to have some wonk go over it and turn it into something that will be like something that will, that can get passed and that will, you know, harm workers because now they've just decided to take that up as a cause.
I'm curious. This is the thing about policy stuff like this is like people don't really read this stuff in the newspaper, like, or it's not covered on any kind of the news that most people get. So like, they're not even being consulted about this, people that it would truly affect, like people. I, at a time in my life, would not have had a home if I couldn't work overtime at my job. Like, and get paid for it. Like, I needed that money. And there are a lot of people that work at places like, I, for example, like a warehouse that come in every Saturday for 6 hours, and that's part of their budget.
Yeah, yeah. There was a guy I knew, guys that I knew that drove from Athens, Ohio up to Columbus, and that was only because they could work 6 days a week, and it made it worth it.
And it's just taking that money away from them, and then Like you're not going to get it. I can't. You know what I want off? I want the day after Thanksgiving off. That's the day I want. Black
yeah,
Friday.
That's the day. We need that day. We need the day after Easter off too. We need a day after every holiday because we didn't get that holiday off. We had to do all of the stupid customs of that day. We had to get caught up in making a 6 hour meal.
Yeah, you end up at the end of Easter, you're just, it's like a normal Sunday, except you're higher than usual or drunker. I usually just get high all day on Easter. That's like my favorite thing about, like my favorite thing about feasting holidays where you don't have to do anything at the end of the day is because I don't get high all day most of the time. Like I usually only do it at night, but on holidays, I smoke weed from the time I get up till the time I go to bed. And it's like, I'm like, this holiday fucking rules, man. I love this thing. And it's like my just rare time.
So what do you have any hobbies or things that you do to like for yourself that aren't involved with trying to change the fate of the earth?
It's called self-care. Right. Okay. Sorry. Self-care.
Wait, oh, hobbies that are not involved with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you just all focused on that? Are you also running like a side business that's a nonprofit or something?
No. I mean, I'd say like hobbies that are not related would probably be like reading and, you know, just whatever books I can find, like because you can just kind of read in any scenario. It doesn't matter. You know, like whether you're paying attention or not, you can just be like, all right, my brain is absorbing these words. I'm having a good time. And I mean, yeah, that's, and actually maybe for like DIYing kind of renovation stuff, like what I'm doing with my sister at this house, like that's kind of a hobby to me. I think it's fun.
Yeah. It's satisfying.
That's sweet. I want to get into that stuff, but I rent and I would never do a single bit of work for my landlord ever. But like,
No, that I'm with completely. I agree. Like I'll decorate my apartment, but I'm not about to do any work on it. But this is my sister's place. So, you know, it's, I feel okay about putting my labor into it.
You can give it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm willing to give my labor to people. People that I like, I'll help a person move. I used to hook guys' cable, I used to run guys' cables in their new houses that I knew when I did the cable company. I was like, hey, I'd love for you to pay me for this, but you don't have to pay me for this. It's kind of my attitude.
Yeah.
Sometimes
it can be running cable for people probably isn't fun. Like
no, it's definitely not. Sometimes they'll hang out with you.
So what's one of the worst jobs you've had?
Probably my least favorite job that I've had was working at Dollar Tree. It was because my fucking manager was like a hard ass for some reason. And then I found out like literally last year, my little brother was working at the same Dollar Tree that I had quit from. And I was his manager. And then I found out it's because he owns the store, which like wasn't clear when he was my manager, but I was like, oh, maybe that's why he was such a shithead, you know, because he's trying to make sure he extracts as much out of me, you know, as he possibly can. Definitely it. Those like stocking shelves and shit.
I think everybody that owns a dollar store is probably an asshole. Like I can almost
guarantee it. Yeah.
Well, you're running on a thin margin. I would be on edge. I mean, I get worried about doing street fight business. I'm pulling my hair out. If I was selling shit for a dollar, I would probably be a jerk.
Well, everybody that goes in there does spend like still spends $20. They just buy 20 things. That's why they like to just have individual items. That's their shit.
I did the Easter dollar. I did Easter at Dollar Tree. It was really, it was the best decision to make.
Yeah, seasonal. Yeah, it's probably good. I mean, I don't really shop there as much anymore. I don't know. It just doesn't feel the same anymore.
No, I always feel like you can, when you go into an old place you used to work, you're like, I see what they're doing here. I know how this place runs. Okay. And you just like, I do that at Kroger or anytime I go to Chuck E. Cheese, I'm like, oh man, this place, these teens back here doing acid.
Yeah, exactly.
Dollar Tree. That's a first. That's a first. I'm going to put that on the board of shitty. That is a shitty job. I never thought about it, but man, I always wanted
There's
one.
Nothing fun about it.
I always wanted one where I just could do the cash register, but they don't give you those. They're like, oh, you got to stock shelves. You got to do this. You got to do that. They never just let you do the cash register and socialize when there's nobody in there.
I know that's what I kind of was hoping for, but, or even just like, don't talk to me. And I just like have headphones in and I'm stocking shelves, but it's always like, put a smile on, stock the shelves while the store is open and, you know, set up the end caps and whatever. And I'm like, yo. And then of course someone's always over your shoulder or they want to chat with you or something. I'm like, no, I don't, that's not why I'm working here for these $6 an hour or whatever it was at the time. Like, whatever minimum wage was in Arkansas in, you know, 2006 or whatever, like it's probably terrible.
There's never two people in a dollar store, like two cashiers. Gosh, yeah. Like, they would never have two cashiers hired and working at the same time.
Yeah, and there's always the manager doing nothing in the store. Like, sitting in the little office behind the balloon area. Like, there's always... There's just a manager sitting in there counting money. Like, what are you doing? Like, or whatever. Counting receipts, whatever they do.
Right. Like, yeah, filling out paperwork. My when I worked at this toy store when I was, like, 16, and my boss would just sit in the office and download songs and movies off Kazaa. Like, he ended up, like, breaking the computer because of all the viruses that he got on the thing. But that was what he spent most of his time doing. He was like, hey, I just got this new cam of, you know, Royal Tenenbaums or whatever the hell it was. And we just watch
That's
it.
That's, like, pretty ridiculous.
He would roll in the, like, the PlayStation display, and he would put it in the office and then plug the computer into it because it had, like, nice speakers and a bigger screen on it. And we just sit there and watch damn movies all the time. That was a pretty nice Great. Job. That place ended up, but I do have to say, that place ended up going bankrupt. So I don't know. Maybe it's because they had some pretty lax policies on making money in the endeavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the problem with capitalism, though. You know, you can't just watch movies all day at the store and then it fucking collapses. Like, but yeah, what we need.
You're right. I mean, we were there to take people had stupid questions about the toys. They wanted us to recommend stuff. They come in with some crazy idea of what they think they saw on TV, and we help them. But if we're not doing that, we're going to watch a movie. We're going to watch Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never had a just me and the owner job. I think that I don't think I'm cut out for that kind of world, you know, like just me and the person in charge of me all the time together would be. I saw a guy, a contractor the other day, had an assistant, and you could tell who the assistant was because the contractors like keep saying like, go over, you know, pointing him to where he's going. And the assistant had to carry the ladder to everything so that he could climb it. And it's like, motherfucker, carry your own ladder.
What?
Yeah, that's like having a servant.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not. Did you witness a surf situation? Like, you intervene. Like,
yeah, somebody.
Stop this.
Well, they used to do that at the cable company a lot. If you were training somebody, I'd always make them carry the ladder. I'd be like, oh, you got to get used to carrying that ladder.
Well, that's good for Hayes. That's good Hayes, though. I don't think that's an expectation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
The more you
maybe.
See these stripes on my uniform, you carry my ladder.
Yeah, Sergeant. You call me Sergeant when we're at these jobs, you know? I once had a job where I was like, I was a project coordinator for, you know, organization who must not be named. And my boss came like to train me on the job, and she just never left my office, and she started to like ask me all these questions about my life, and I was like, why is she worried about what I'm doing? And she found out like who I was dating, like who I was, like all this shit about me, and she would just ask like more invasive questions every day. And then one day I came to the office and she had printed out a picture of my ex-boyfriend and put it on the wall, and she wouldn't let me take it down. And I think that's what she thought. I think she thought that was hazing, but I was like, no, this shit is harassment. Like, this isn't hazing. I have to quit this job immediately.
Yeah. This is playing too much. There's some boundaries. Wow. That were
crossed.
Yeah. There's
a huge, she has a lot of boundary issues there. I was yeah. like, what is going on? Like,
oh yeah.
You want I didn't a job? Know. It was like my first real job, you know, I was like, oh, maybe this is just what you have to do when you have like a good job. No.
She walks into your room and hands you a Marilyn Monroe meme that says, if you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare. I can't deal with those bosses. So I guess we haven't really straight up talked about it. But politically, what do you call yourself? What are you categorizing yourself as these days?
These days, I'm a socialist, definitely. I'm like, you know, I never lived in New York City, so I'm not deep into like sectarianism, you know, like I didn't have that experience. But, you know, I definitely like, you know, kind of I know what political system I want to see enacted, you know, participatory democracy and socialism. That's where I'm at.
So what, like, so the idea is, so, I mean, how are your feelings about America though? Like, do we have to scrap it or can we, do we start over?
I mean, I think we have to scrap it for sure.
Okay, good.
I think, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. Because, you know, it's just sort of, at some point you have to, it's not even throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's like, what good does U.S. empire enact on planet Earth? You know, I would say none. So, you know, there's definitely a situation where you need to figure some other means of governance out. And I think that, you know, people have an affinity to each other and they want to collaborate, you know, and create support systems and support networks that work for where they are as a community. And then also that I think can be, you know, scaled out, to work for larger swaths of land. So, you know, I'm into seeing that brought about, you know, piece by piece, you know, liberated zone by liberated zone, basically, in the future that I, you know, that I hope to help enact.
Yeah, definitely. I'm down for that as well. That sounds great. I'm glad you came on. I'm glad you, were able to let us drill into your life. I hope, we didn't bother you too much.
No, I was happy to come on.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. I had fun.
Yeah, this was fun.
So I did ask before you came on the show that you had to pick your closing song, and so you can go ahead and lay it on us. And I'm excited. I'm going to be hearing for this for the first time as well. So let it rip.
I want my song to be "Ride" by Lizzo.
Okay.
I don't even know that one.
It's going to be Brett's favorite song tomorrow, though, to everybody else. Like, yeah. Oh, have you heard the song? It's my favorite song.
Yeah, it'll be in my Snapchat. Coming soon to the Street Fight Snapchat. "Ride" by Lizzo. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I like this. So what do you know about this artist?
I just know that she's awesome. Like, a few friends put me on to her latest album, and she has, like, a couple of bangers on that one. But I thought, you know, let's go with a little older album, and just a jam that I kind of really enjoy. So I think it's worth checking out for folks who, you know, just love to kind of feel good about themselves, particularly at a time like this, you know, when it's kind of hard to come by, that good kind of feel good music that's, you know, about taking care of yourself and loving yourself. So that's what she puts out.
Dope. That's awesome. We need that right now. Thank you so much, for coming on. For those of you that are interested in following more of Angelica's work, you can find her on Twitter. It's Angemclarke. Yeah, and tell us a little bit, I guess also tell us a little bit about the Left World podcast.
The Left World podcast is just kind of my friend Matt and I talking about politics and culture and movies that we love, and hope. We know you're just getting out, and we were trying to be more consistent with it, but we just kind of talk about left politics, how we see what's going on in the world today, how we're dealing with Trump land, and you know, how we're building a better future.
Oh, that's awesome. Sorry, it was cutting out a little bit there. Oh. But it'll come out. It'll come out in the wash. And then YouTube stitches it all together. So that sounds great. I am subscribed. I'll keep listening in. Thank you for coming on. For those of you that want to hear more of what we do, streetfightradio.com, like I said. And to keep more exciting things happening in Street Fight Universe, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/streetfightradio. To support us, you can get zines, Kratom, live videos, all kinds of bonus content by heading over there. We will see you next time. We're Street Fight. Peace.
Yeah, LA Carolyn with Carolyn. Caroline, but I had to make it rhyme. I'm addicted to that weather like heroin. That is why I cannot give it any time. Just say no. It's too good to me. You are too good to me. Oh, D on compliments. I need some oxygen. So I dip to the PNW. Some of you don't know where that is. Good. Need a little solitude with my crew. Remembering what's real is what makes you you. Oh, it's too good to me. No, it's no good for me. I can't be out here, homie. Ain't what it used to be. Sitting in bed like man, wishing, itching for days with no end. Sound checks, checks in. RD senses wrapped in, getting full of that adrenaline. Eat it up like Satan. You can't have it, take it. You came in up, Caden, breaking up my cadence. Got that willpower like Jaden. And we keep it going up. Make it go around, around again. And we keep it going up, going up. And we keep it going up. Make it go around, around again. And we keep it going up. Had a heart to heart over fresh croissant. Wondering why these dudes be tripping. She like, girl, I'm task giving them damn. YOLO, guess that's why he want a photo. Dressed in polo, I'ma run me up to D show. But never there when I need hoes. Open mind, but my heart closed. Where you been? Back again, young man. I remember you from way, way when. You never gave it or reciprocated. And when I bounced for my sake, you peeped your mistake. She left me is always the excuse. I swear there should be support groups for men without Lizzo. Meet once a week and deal with y'all issues. Google me and jack off in the tissue. Yeah, you know what though? We keep it going up. Make it go around, around again. And we keep it going up, going up. That you want me to, feeling like I can't amount in what I'm supposed to do, but I'm here now, like how this happened, head in the pillows, I'm crunching on capping, I'm chilling, that's where I've been chilling, taking a break, feeling hella breakable, I was taught that life has no regrets and no mistakes, no, no, bet I made some granite, but my heart cold, bruh, definitely, definitely granite, wrote this song halfway to Chicago, wondering if I should call you, would to make you feel special, or would it give me reasons to forget you? Out of state, out of time, me more like out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, you know what though?